Du lytter til Hestedølærerne. Podcasten for dig, der er dølæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Mit navn er Emma Thomsen. Jeg er dølæge og arbejder som konsulent for Børinger Ingelheim. I Hestedølærerne taler vi om tilstanden og sygdommen, der kan ramme heste, men vi tager også andre emner op, som er relevante for dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Denne podcast er lavet af Børinger Ingelheim, og med denne podcast ønsker vi at give noget tilbage til dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Vi ønsker at tage emner op, som er interessante og relevante for dig, og hvis du har forslag til emner, du gerne vil høre mere om, eller tips til en gæst, du gerne vil høre, så tøv ikke med at kontakte os. Mine kontaktoplysninger finder du i podcastens beskrivelse.
Welcome back to the Equine Vets, where we talk to Ingrid Verfurt of the University of Leipzig about nutrition and clinical nutrition in horses. Very big and important and very interesting subject. And this episode we want to dedicate to muscles and how it can relate to or interact with nutrition. But first of all, I want to ask Louise if you can just briefly explain the muscle issues that a horse can have or muscle diseases.
Yes, Maria, I can. Because we have a lot of different muscle diseases in the horse. And some of them are very well explained and some of them we don't know. And we put that in a big category of idiopathic myopathies. The ones that we usually know is the horse that's tying up for no specific reason, and that can be a genetic mutation, as we know, PSSM type 1. And then we have the big group of PSSM type 2s, where we can't categorize them as a genetic disease yet, but they all have the same histopathology in common, where they have inclusion bodies in various muscle cells. So we also have a disease called MFM, which is included in the PSSM type 2. And then we have a lot of rhabdomyolysis types, but they all have the same clinical appearance at hand, where they stiffen up and they start sweating and they have problems performing their jobs. And this can come in lesser or worse degrees. So, but they all have the same kind of clinical presentation of being unwilling to move. So specific feeding advice, I'll ask Ingrid about it in a little bit, but we all try to feed them the same way and handle them the same way. So Ingrid, what are your general recommendation feeding wise for these horses that have these idiopathic myopathies or even PSSM types? How do we handle them when it comes to the nutrition?
Yeah, again, we always start with the forage. So we always should take care of the minimum forage intake, and it depends a little bit on the body weight. So 1.5% of hay related to the body weight, or up to 2%. I really prefer in horses with unspecific muscle disorder, when they are not obese, then I really recommend to go a little bit up higher with the forage intake, let's say 2% of body weight. So that is always the main point. And then sometimes I ask the horse owners to do an analysis. Sometimes the forages can be very high in sugar content, and sugar, same as starch, may have a negative impact on muscle disorders. So I recommend, at least to have a level, or to know about the level of sugar, if soaking in some cases is necessary. But that is maybe at least in horses who suffer from PSSM type 1, that soaking of the hay to reduce the sugar content is necessary, but maybe not in unspecific muscle disorders. And then it depends really on the body weight. If you have a lean horse or an obese horse, let's talk about a lean or a horse with a moderate body weight and doing exercise. So you can use a starch reduced complementary feed, because in general we try to reduce the starch and sugar content. So at least it is still possible to feed some oats, maybe in an adult horse, about 500 to 600 kilogram. It can be still around 1 kilogram of oats, but it's also possible to replace totally the oat and to use a complementary feed without or with a reduced starch and sugar level. And then I also recommend to put some more oil into the diet. Again, it depends a little bit on the complementary feed because we have some complementary feed. They have fat levels up to 10 to 12%. Then probably it's not necessary to add some extra oil, but we have some complementary feed. They have a fat level around 5 to 7%. Then it makes sense to add some more oil into the diet. Again, it depends on the body condition score. It's not necessary in obese horses, but in lean or horses with a moderate body weight, yes, you can add some oil. In the moment, we don't oil as extra calories. What we do not know exactly is if omega-3 fatty acids may have an anti-inflammatory effect. But as I'm quite sure that omega-3 fatty acids may have not any negative impact on health, so I recommend omega-3 fatty acids because of the potential to have an inflammatory effect. So add linseed oil or fish oil or whatever you want. And then, of course, take care of the minerals. For example, selenium is also a trace element, which is quite essential that we consider the recommendation for the selenium intake. However, it makes no sense to add excessive selenium because selenium can be quite toxic. Of course, the vitamin E plays an essential role. And here I give more vitamin E than recommended in healthy horse. I'm always around 3 up to 4 milligram vitamin E per kilogram body weight and use a natural vitamin E. Another important point is for me the electrolyte sublimation. I have the feeling that it's a little bit different in Sweden and maybe also in Denmark, but in Germany, people really refuse to add electrolytes in the diet, especially salt, because they're afraid that there might be negative consequences on the stomach. But we have already talked about that. So for me, it's quite essential when the horse is sweating, then the horse will lose sodium and chlorine and potassium, and especially the sodium must be replaced by salt. So we know also that some muscle disorders may also result by a sodium depletion. So it's for me a very important point.
And how much would you add a table salt without iodine? You would add how much for, let's say, a 500-kilo horse?
It depends on the sweating. So if there are no sweat losses, so I wouldn't add any extra salt, just the salt block. But when we have significant sweating, let's say about 7 to 10 liters, but we know that will happen even in moderate exercise. I start always with 30 gram extra salt, and when the horses are still able or can compete, so then you can increase it up to 60 to 70 gram. But it's very important to know it's just when horses really lose sweat, and it's also important to spread the total amount of salt into several small meals. Let's start when you have a horse which can compete on a medium or even high level of exercise again after solving the muscle disorders. Then maybe the aim is 60 gram salt over the day, and you should spread it up to, let's say, 20 gram in the morning, 20 gram in the meal around midday, and at late night. It's important not to add the salt immediately before the exercise, otherwise the horse will develop thirst or the bladder is full. So because we also stimulate the drinking. So electrolytes for me quite important. It is not really necessary to add potassium and extra potassium in most horses because we have sufficient potassium in the forage. Another point which I would like to add is that sometimes horses suffer under respiratory tract diseases like equine asthma, and they have also muscle disorders, which is simple to explain because they need an sufficient oxygen for the muscle metabolism. And there is a very close link between muscle disorders and horses who have equine asthma. And those horses who suffer under equine asthma, it's of course important to consider forage quality. And in those horses, I also recommend, for example, steaming the hay to reduce the dust particles. And so by treating the equine asthma by proper management, you sometimes also treat the muscle disorders. So it's very important to know that there might be a specific reason, although the muscle disorders are unspecific. And I think especially the respiratory tract should be considered. Maybe one word, muscle disorders, they have nothing to do with muscle acidosis. So milkshakes to increase the blood pH or to increase the pH in the muscle, they are really useless. And I think they are also dangerous because most of the horses who suffer under severe muscle disorders, especially after a strenuous exercise, they suffer under an alkalosis and not under acidosis. So milkshakes, they shouldn't use in horses. And we have a lot of studies done. And we know that it's not just, it's okay, you can do it or not. They have really negative consequences. So it's very important, don't use any milkshakes in horses anymore.
And can you explain what a milkshake is?
It's a combination of calcium carbonate, magnesium carbonate. So carbonate, these are really the buffering substances. And again, it's really important to know most horses suffer after strenuous exercise under an alkalosis and not an acidosis. It's very local, the acidosis in the muscle, and you can't treat the local acidosis in the muscle with milkshakes. But in general, it is an alkalosis.
It's baking powder, isn't it? They use baking or bicarbonate.
Genau, it's a carbonate, it's a buffer. Yeah, and they use baking powder. Yes, and it really shouldn't do that. That is really a big mistake, and it has really negative consequences for the health of the horse.
Yeah, super good to know as well.
Maybe another word, for many horses, access to pasture is also very positive. You should think it over after strenuous exercise. Don't put the horse in a box. And so it's much better to put the horse, for example, on a pasture. So there's slow movement and they can eat some grass, etc. So that is also very important, the whole management. And maybe you should also consider that during exercise, there's an increase in temperature in the core temperature of the horse, and it makes no sense to put a big blanket on the horse or to use any to warm up the muscle after strenuous exercise. It's really important that the horses should cool down, because heat has really negative consequences on the enzymes. So long cool down, that the horse, at least on a pasture, that is in most cases a very good way how you can cool down a horse.
Yeah, I think we're coming back to the forage. I think there must be a reason for that. No, but honestly, I mean, I think it's a very good point and very important. That's where you have to start, regardless of which condition your horse is suffering from. If it's something gastric, or if it's something muscle, or anywhere, you really have to start with the forage. Most important point. But when it comes to not necessarily supplements, but feedstuffs in general, what feeds should you avoid at any cost? I mean, we've talked a little bit about starch in muscle disease affected horses. What's your thoughts on that?
I think on a general way, you should avoid over supplementation. That is, for me, of big concern. You should avoid, or maybe when, again, coming a little bit back to the muscle diseases, there are a lot of companies, they recommend manganese to improve muscle disorders. But that is really strange for me because we don't have any data in horses and there's no study performed. And even Stephanie Wahlberg, I asked her about this topic and she has no idea why manganese should be supplemented to horses with PSSM or unspecific muscle disorders. That is the one point. And the second point is that coming back to the forage again, most forages contain sufficient amounts of manganese. Of course, there are, let's say, 20% of forage qualities, they may have low manganese levels. But in most cases, these forage qualities suffer under completely different problems. Maybe just say low protein content, etc., etc. So it's not just the manganese what is missing. For me, the over supplementation of manganese is, I can't explain it and I do not support it. But of course, I have to mention in the moment, we don't have any negative effects of an over supplementation of manganese, except that you spend a lot of money for useless supplements. So that is what I really tried to explain the horse owners, that manganese, I don't know why feed companies recommend manganese. And I also see a lot of magnesium supplements on the market. But again, magnesium, of course, is an essential major element. And of course, we want to cover the requirements. But again, when you add sufficient amounts of forage and maybe a complementary feed, most of the complementary feeds also contain magnesium. And then you also add, for example, a mineral supplement, which also contains manganese and magnesium. Then when you are in many diets, I see it's more than twice or threefold over the recommendations. And it's not necessary to add any extra magnesium into the diet. So that's all. I think the over-supplementation is a big issue in equine nutrition.
In general, yeah. So when we talk about healthy horses then and healthy muscles, so to say, there's also a lot of discussion among horse owners on what to feed and how to feed in order for the horse to produce or gain or build muscle. Is in your experience or to your knowledge, I mean, can you feed a normal healthy horse to a better muscle condition? Or is this genetics, or, I mean, it's all dependent on exercise, I guess, but what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, you already mentioned it's always a combination of genetics and, of course, exercise. Without any exercise, there will be no muscle building. You can feed as much of protein as you want. So muscle building clearly relates also to the stimulus of the exercise. But, of course, protein intake or selected amino acids is really important. And again, coming back to the forage, we know that the protein levels can be very low in a lot of forages. Therefore, we have on a general basis a lack of protein intake. So, of course, that is quite important. And not all of the complementary feed have sufficient amounts of protein. So, adding extra protein sources like the alfalfa or the pea flakes, for example, or grass. So an increase in protein intake makes sense. And again, we should have a closer look to the amino acid profile. And especially for muscle building, of course, the essential amino acid like lysine, methionine, etc., are of great importance. But for the muscle building, also the amino acid leucine is of great interest. But again, we have just the data from humans so in certain muscle disorders in humans or in tumor patients with cancer, when they lose a lot of muscle mass, then the leucine seems to play an essential role, not alone, but we should consider it. And when we consider a little bit more the leucine, the pea flakes are really an interesting protein source, or you use amino acids feed additives. So consider the protein intake and consider the type of protein source, Or, for example, it's also interesting, the casein, which is a milk protein. It's also very interesting protein source. However, the palatability of the casein is quite low. But, for example, some horse owners, they use a milk replacer for foals as a protein source. It's also possible. And for protein synthesis after exercise to rebuild muscle protein, then it seemed to be quite important to add some extra protein immediately after exercise. Immediately after exercise mean in the time frame between 60 to 90 minutes after finishing the exercise, to have a kind of protein load that you can use either, of course, the alfalfa, you can use the pea flakes, and of course it's a combination, maybe adding some complementary feed, a muesli, and add some extra protein. Then you have a significant improvement in muscle resynthesis. And I already mentioned the gamma ursanol. We know from at least one study, in vitro study, in muscle cells of horses that protein, or those genes which are responsible for protein synthesis, that we can trigger it. So it could be also a good idea to add to the protein source some gamma ursanol, rice bran, for example, or rice oil is also possible. The rice oil might be a little bit better because it's more concentrated, the gamma ursanol. So these are, for me, the main facts to improve muscle mass in horses. But again, it's a combination of different things, and you really have to consider no exercise, no muscle.
Yeah.
And are there any sources where the protein is more absorbable for or better for horses than others? What are the different sources? We've talked about alfalfa and stuff, but what are the best protein sources for the horses?
We know that single amino acids, that the absorption rate might be really high. It can be up to 100%, although we don't believe in 100% in science. But when you use those supplements which contain single amino acids, you must really make sure that there are sufficient amounts of amino acid in this product. And the protein availability is in feedstuff, in single feedstuff, are really dependent on the fiber, because the protein or the nitrogen, probably better, is binded to the fiber, and some binding the availability of the nitrogen or the protein is much higher, so it's the soluble protein, so it's easily digestible. But when it's strongly binded in the lignin structure, then it's not accessible in the small intestine, because the horse strongly depends on the excess of protein amino acids in the small intestine. It's not possible when the proteins enter in the large intestine. So it's good for the microflora, because the microflora also needs some nitrogen, of course. But then in the moment, we don't have any other data that those proteins, those amino acids which are produced in the large intestine or enter the large intestine, are not available for the horse. So it's strong. And therefore it's important to have those protein sources which have protein which is easily available in the small intestine, what we say pre-cecal digestibility of the protein. So, but the protein in the alfalfa as a forage-based protein source is easily available, but also, of course, in the potato protein or in the single amino acids.
Okay.
I think the amino acid issue is quite interesting, because, I mean, there are no forage analysis where you will read the full ingredient list down to the very specific amino acids. And I think there is a lot of I don't know, information out there that your horse needs this amino acid and this amino acid. And I mean, obviously it's all true. They do need all of the essential amino acids. But I think the question if you have a healthy horse that has no problem with its muscles, and that you have a forage that the total amount of protein is adequate, is that sort of enough? Can you trust that it gets all the essential amino acids from only that forage if it's enough protein in it?
When it looks good, the the horse and it's healthy and the muscle, it's sufficient muscle building, then of course it should be okay. And because also in the forage, it's not just the total amount of protein, it's also the total amount of the fiber, because when you have a high fiber content in the forage, then it's much more protein is binded and it's not available in the small intestine. But when you have an early cut meadow hay or an alfalfa hay or a hay which contains at least some herbs and some legumes, then of course availability of the protein in the small intestine will be high. And the horse will always tell you the story. So if it looks good and it works good, the performance is good, then of course it will be sufficient amounts of energy, of protein.
Yeah, then you don't need to worry about it, what's the specific amino acids, because I think it goes for many ingredients or many of the substances. Everything isn't listed on the analysis, and then you can start thinking, like, does it get enough of this and that? But it's a very good point that if the horse is healthy and looking good and doing what you want it to do, then it must be getting something right.
And maybe another comment, horses on pasture. And of course, it's necessary that there's sufficient grass on the pasture. The pasture grass is one of the best available protein source, which is a typical horse feed. And therefore, we see that when horses have access to pasture, it means several hours. And of course, it means that there's sufficient grass available. Then you don't need an extra protein source, because grass is one of the best protein sources we have.
So what is your favorite protein source? If you were to pick one that you should supplement a horse that could use a little bit extra, what's your favorite?
For me, it's always a combination. Mm-hmm. I personally prefer the combination of alfalfa with pea flakes. In the alfalfa, I have the lysine, etc. In the pea flakes, I have the leucine and the linseed meal, because in the linseed meal, I have some extra of the sulfur-containing amino acids. So it's always a combination. Another combination could be in performance horses, a milk replacer. But for me, using a combination of, for example, alfalfa, you have also some extra fibers. So there are always some arguments against, or but it, for me, it's always a combination.
Good. Then we're reaching the end of our podcast session with you, Ingrid. But I wanted to ask you a final question that we do ask most of our podcast guests, actually, within their specific fields. And for you, it would be the whole field of equine nutrition. What would you say are the most common myths or misconceptions that you encounter? Now you have the chance to debunk them once and for all.
I mean, I have already mentioned it several times. It's the over-supplementation. So diets which contain more than, 3 to 10 supplements, makes no sense, to be honest. That is one myth, and don't expect too much of supplementation, because we are missing facts, and an over supplementation does not really need that there is an improvement in health. That is for me quite important. And maybe when we come to a very small point, is that horses should not consume minerals which contain molasses. So that is also a myth, because when you use a molasses mineral supplement, the level of molasses is, let's say, up to 3 to 5%, and you add, let's say, 100 gram of a mineral feed, and when you look, then you have, let's say, 4 gram of sugar by molasses, and you can feed a horse with insulin dysregulation, with gastric ulcers, a molasses mineral supplement, because by molasses, the palatability is much higher, and also the product, the stability of this product is much higher. So this is really a myth, that horses cannot consume molasses mineral feeds. It is really nonsense, because the levels are so low.
So the sugar scare then.
The sugar scare, because from the forage, the sugar intake is much, much, much higher than from a molasses mineral supplement. That is really nonsense.
Thank you so much, Ingrid, for being our guest in this podcast series. It was very interesting. I mean, everyone who knows me know that I'm a nutrition nerd myself, and I've read a lot, but I still learned a lot from these sessions. So I'm very happy for that, and I hope the listeners are too. So thank you so much for being our guest.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. And yeah, I hope that I could give you one idea. And it's always a forage first. Make forage great again.
Fantastic. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tak fordi du lyttede med til Hestedyllerne. Hvis du kan lide det, du hører, så læg en anmeldelse i din podcast-app. Og glem ikke at fortælle dine kolleger om podcasten. Vi er snart tilbage med et nyt spændende afsnit af Hestedyllerne.